Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, Donald Trump's name is in the so-called Epstein files. What is that going to do to his already anti MAGA base? And to what extent will this overshadow the US president's visit to Scotland, which starts today?
Are people still talking about this guy, this creep? That is unbelievable.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and my guests today are Dr. Clodagh Harrington. Clodagh lectures in American politics at UCC and hosts the Chicken in Every Pot podcast, and Paddy Duffy, a Glasgow-based writer and broadcaster. Paddy has produced documentaries that include Trump Takes on the World for the BBC and Angry, White and American for Channel 4. You're both very welcome to News Talk Daily, and they are angry, white and American at the minute. Paddy, I would imagine, and about to get a hell of a lot angrier, but let's just take a step back. What are the Epstein files?
I think it's a really great place to start, actually, Ciara, because I think the Epstein files has become almost like a very neat description of something that is very nebulous. The truth is that for all the chat about the release in the Epstein files, an awful lot of the stuff, you know, that we know about Epstein has been known and has been knowable for quite some time. And in fact, an awful lot of it even came out as recently as a couple of weeks before the election in 2024. There was a woman called Stacey Williams, who is an ex-girlfriend of Jeffrey Epstein, and she came out with some revelations that involved Donald Trump. But nobody seemed to bat an eyelid now. What is interesting is that I suppose this is kind of the ultimate rod for their own back, because I think an awful lot of the far right influencers, if you like, an awful lot of the people that now in the second term, with all the kind of the quote unquote sensible Republicans sort of out of the way since the first, an awful lot of them seem to be laboring under the misapprehension that there is one book that has, you know, it's almost like some sort of Bible of revelations. And it's not really as simple as that. And I think that's a big part of why this is so complicated for Donald Trump, because, as you say, the Wall Street Journal came out with some big revelations there on Wednesday evening. But it's just the latest in a drip feed of things. And so as long as people keep finding this interesting, and as long as it's clear that, I suppose, Trump has made such an about face on this, then I think people are still going to be continuously interested by this.
To remind people, what has been revealed in the last couple of days by the Wall Street Journal is that not only is Donald Trump named in these so-called files, although we're not quite sure what they are, that actually he's been briefed and has been aware since May that he is in these files.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, this is such a big bombshell that it stopped an awful lot of network anchors during the middle of the week in their tracks, and they just started reading the article verbatim. So this is a big deal because, well, it shows that the Wall Street Journal have a bit of ammo on this, for starters, because people have been saying that Trump is in the Epstein files, whatever it is they are, and however extensive they are, for quite some time now. But the fact that he has been briefed by officials, the fact that he was briefed by his own AG about this, and in May, is really interesting stuff. And I suppose the other context of this is that, you know, as recently as February, she was saying, I mean, this isn't too much of a paraphrase, she kind of goes, oh yeah, I've got the whole list of the Epstein, you know, of all the people that are revealed to be in Epstein's black book. I'm reviewing it right now. And then she turned around and said, actually, you know what, this is all a big fuss over nothing. And so this is, I suppose, what makes it such a fascinating unforced error for the president and for his administration, because nobody was really, you know, pressuring him to do this. Nobody was really forcing his hand on this. I mean, the Epstein files and releasing them, it's almost a bit like getting Brexit done, you know? I mean, it was so nebulous that, you know, it didn't really mean anything, but it was a terrific slogan. It kept people on side. Then for the most, I suppose, plain spoken president in modern times to kind of go from, yeah, I'm releasing everything, to then go, actually, you know what, this is quite complex. You know, it's so strange, it's so weird and so jarring to hear Donald Trump, you know, advocate for any kind of complexity at all, that basically it means that, you know, that something big has to be up.
Yeah, and the thing is, it is typical for law enforcement to collect information about hundreds of people during the course of an investigation, like they would have into the investigation into Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. And we don't know in what context Trump's name appears in these files. But we do know, Patty, is that there was a relationship between Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump in the early 90s, that he called him a terrific guy. He said he liked women on the younger side, I think was the phrase that he used. And there are photographs, aren't there? Lots of photographs now all over the internet that show the two of them together.
Absolutely. And the reason that we know a lot of this is because the Wall Street Journal had their latest big bombshell before this one last week, because Donald Trump had written something for Jeffrey Epstein's 50th birthday. He'd like sort of made this what's described as a body image and sort of wrote this like it's almost like an imagined script sort of for the inside. CNN have also sort of released new things that hadn't been seen before. Him attending the wedding of Donald Trump and Marta Maples back in the early 90s, them together at a Victoria's Secret fashion show sort of in the late 90s. So it would suggest that, you know, that they've been thick as thieves. And I think what is remarkable, and what an awful lot like the late night comedy hosts have been making a point of, is that it seems like Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein have been friends for a lot longer than anyone else, because Trump falls out with people, you know, extensively and often, and they seem to be pretty tight for at least well over a decade. So this is all sort of adding grist to the mill, really. Not just that his names are on it, but, you know, in some potentially serious capacity. But I think what is interesting about this is that for years now, release the Epstein files has been this rallying cry. And it's almost like it's the next stage, if you like, of the drain the swamp. And it's, you know, taken to its natural and incredibly serious conclusion. So, and I suppose this is why it's potentially so damaging to his base and to an awful lot of people, even within the White House. I suppose that it becomes clear that releasing the Epstein files isn't as easy as all that. And that also that draining the swamp might reveal some very unpleasant things.
I mean, the Make America Great Again, the MAGA base, they did anticipate that this administration would confirm their belief in a conspiracy that would implicate powerful elites in America and indeed across the world in sex crimes against children. And I suppose, Clodagh, confirm their conspiracy that Jeffrey Epstein did not, in fact, commit suicide in that jail cell in 2019, but that he was somehow taken out by forces who were protecting the elite. That's what's really behind this, isn't it?
Oh, yes, I think so, absolutely. And I mean, just listening to things that's been said there, it just seems like this is a political wound for Donald Trump. I can't think of a time or an example where this has been the case previously. You know, he has weathered everything up until, well, perhaps now, in terms of, you know, all the stuff, any sort of unpleasant truths that have come out about him along the way, from, you know, lewd comments about women to infidelity to all the other things. Nothing has ever stuck. I mean, the political left and liberals and maybe the mainstream media and whoever can, you know, clutch their pearls. But those who were attracted to him as a kind of a strong and straightforward leader, if you like, were not bothered by those things. But this moves the dial, I think, in two ways, perhaps. One is, as you say, the disappointment from the more conspiracy minded among his followers, who were really, really hoping for some juicy horror, let's call it, on political opponents or kind of liberal, high profile individuals who they would have not just a dislike of, but a real kind of hatred of. So the idea that this might turn around and actually bite their own leader in this really potentially very damaging way is really problematic. And I suppose the other thing as well that I would just observe myself is that one can get away with an awful lot of things if you're the MAGA leader, but the sexual exploitation of underage girls is going to be, you know, a no-no for quite a lot of people. And if you think of the kind of the core MAGA base, a lot of those people are older, white, conservative, Christian men, a lot of them over 50s, you know, people who would be grandparents, you know, parents, grandparents, kind of family oriented. This has the potential, depending on, you know, what comes out, to be really genuinely shocking. And I don't even know how we can be shocked anymore because so much has happened in the past decade, but this could be just next level, I think.
What's interesting, though, is that it does actually go beyond the MAGA base, beyond those who believe in conspiracy theories, because I saw there was a poll conducted by The Economist and YouGov back in earlier this month. 67% of Americans believe the government is hiding evidence related to this Jeffrey Epstein. So it is beyond the MAGA base. Talk to me, Clodagh, about the attempts being made in the last 7 days, particularly to mollify the MAGA base. He's gone to the courts. There's been a review by the FBI and the Justice Department.
So there are efforts to offer, you know, some kind of comfort, solace, practical responses. I think what I have noted with some interest is that, you know, some of those high profile MAGA type names that we would know, people like Tucker Carlson, Laura Loomer, Steve Bannon, those kinds of people, you know, a lot of very, very harsh criticism on the administration, but largely withholding criticism of the guy himself. So like he still has the goodwill and the loyalty of a lot of those people who have really powerful platforms, albeit no longer on kind of mainstream media outlets, but they still have huge followings online. And there's still a line between really harsh words about the administration, but not of Trump himself. I guess the other thing as well that is worth noting, that as well as offering some kind of practical placating methods or routes or whatever, the other thing that is coming out is attacks against predecessors, against the obvious political opponents. I think just maybe 2 days ago, Trump accused Barack Obama, I think it was Tuesday, you know, accused him of treason. Just a deflection technique, a kind of a throwing a dead cat on the table or whatever. But there's already this other very large dead cat on the table now. And I'm not sure that talking about, you know, the 2016 presidential campaign being undermined by Obama or whatever it is that Trump is trying to say now, or, you know, making accusations against Joe Biden or whatever, that these deflections and distractions and that are going to be enough. I'm not sure.
I mean, there were calls for Pam Bondi, the AG, and the FBI chief, Kash Patel, to come before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Could that happen, do you think, Clodagh?
I think if there has to perhaps be a sacrifice or two, yes, that could indeed work out. I mean, I think Bondi in particular has been getting a huge amount of ire and anger. And those people, like I said, who were kind of holding on to their Trump loyalty are particularly focusing on her. So perhaps that might be a route forward to show how seriously the matter is being taken, and that, you know, maybe somebody might have to take the fall or take the blame.
I saw Pam Bondi saying that she would go to the jail and interview Maxwell, you know, as seemed to be some attempt to try and placate the base, that we are still looking into this and willing to investigate this. But it really was met with disdain amongst the MAGA base. What about those further up the food chain, the J.D. Vances, Speaker Mike Johnson, Paddy? How are they dealing with this?
Well, Vance is in a pretty difficult situation because he was going on the Right Wing Bro podcast just before the election saying, oh, yeah, no, we've got to release these files. Now, he's been keeping fairly quiet about it for the moment anyway. But what is really interesting, actually, among everything else that happened during the middle of the week, is that the House has wrapped up for the summer.
Wrapped early, wasn't it?
Yeah, they wrapped a day early so that they wouldn't have to go through sort of the awkwardness of another vote being brought to the floor, which is fairly extraordinary in itself because, I mean, I suppose in the Senate, I was always a Senate guy whenever I was making sort of television shows and the procedure of that. But the House is much more rules-based and things very rarely get out of committee. So the fact that something, you know, that they would use what's called the discharge petition to try and bring this onto the floor, like an early day motion, is really quite extraordinary. Now, one of the other big things that broke as well as the Wall Street Journal during the week is that there was a big splash on Politico there on Thursday morning about how incensed Republicans are, whether they be in leadership or whether they be backbenchers, about just how badly this whole thing is being handled. And it's well worth thinking, actually, about the last time that there was something to be as energized about whenever congressmen go back to their districts for the summer. The last big one of these would have been about 2009 at the start of the Tea Party movement, when people were absolutely up in arms about everything that the government was doing. Now, at that point, the Republicans were able to make hay out of it. but it may be the case now that they really reap the whirlwind. And it brings us back to what Clodagh was saying about earlier on there, is that an awful lot of this this sort of MAGA-dom, if you like, an awful lot of this kind of Trump political empire has, if you cast your mind back to Pizzagate in the 2016 election, an awful lot of the firepower for Republicans as they exist now was around tackling, you know, high profile famous people that were alleged to have run sex trafficking rings out of a pizza joint in Washington, D.C. This was one of the big conspiracy theories that drove an awful lot of interest and an awful lot of enthusiasm in Trump's campaign. So the idea now that nearly 10 years later, it is exactly the same issue that, you know, maybe the double-edged sword that finally wounds him is really quite significant.
I see the Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene warned that dangling bits of red meat is no longer enough for the base. They want these files published. Is this something that could be potentially fatal to Donald Trump, do you think, Clodagh? And can he actually legally publish everything that the FBI have gathered through the course of their investigation?
Well, just to answer the second part of that first, from what I've read, it seems that there are some constraints in terms of what can be shared. Now, I don't quite know, are those limitations political or legal? I guess that sort of remains to be seen in terms of what this does mean for him. I was just thinking there, listening to Patty, about where Vance might be with all of this. Perhaps, you know, eyes on the bigger prize sooner than he thought. Who knows? You know, one can only speculate. But certainly, this is the first time where there might actually be some real fear. And this has never happened before. The reference back there to QAnon is really important as well, in terms of we've been down these roads before. I mean, the Tea Party rage back in, you know, when they first came to the fore in 2009 or whatever, I mean, it was really, it was similar energy and kind of mad frustration to what you see with a lot of the MAGA base. But that's kind of, you know, the overlapping in the Venn diagram with the conspiracy stuff. A lot of grievances are legitimate, things to do with the economy, things to do with policy choices, etc. Those are absolutely valid, but they get lost then in the overlap with the conspiracy madness and the, you know, the satanic cults or whatever. But here we are. I mean, this is a lot of what Trump does to draw people in, you know, the kind of the fact and the fantasy and the fiction all merged in together to the point where some of us are left kind of holding our heads in our hands, but others enjoy that excitement. And if what he's offering becomes tarnished amongst those that really, really support him. I mean, he never had a huge base to begin with. All those past three elections, he never got more than 50% of the vote. So he really needs to not alienate these people who are not huge in number necessarily, but extremely devoted and dedicated to him.
So it sounds really like it is a crisis of Trump's own making, as you're saying, Clodagh. Paddy, you're in Scotland. What's the public mood there ahead of the visit of the president to what is his ancestral homeland?
Well, quite. And this is the interesting conundrum, I think, that an awful lot of people in Scotland face, because, you know, on the face of it, he is about as welcome as a chest infection and harder to shift as well. People in Glasgow in particular, but Scotland in general, I think really pride themselves on, you know, their civic mindedness, their public mindedness, their generosity of spirit, their humor, and I suppose and their ability to speak truth to power, you know, whether that be Westminster or whether that be the White House. So Donald Trump is an absolutely ideal foil for that sort of sense of self to manifest itself in the form of protest. You know, I'm just even thinking back at some of the other times he's been there. You know, there was that guy with a static balloon trying to put it on his head. There was the late comedian Janie Godley who followed him around with a fairly rude placard. And also there's a guy, I was just sort of reading there yesterday, that there's a guy called Joseph Delap, who sounds like he could be from Donegal, but he's actually American himself. But he's going up to Aberdeen during the weekend to run what he calls the USAD, the United States Apology Desk. I mean, there's a serious aspect behind it. I mean, like, people here do really not like him and what he represents, just axiomatically. But the complicating factor is that Trump is, by any definition, the most Scottish US president there is. Like, his mother was born on the Isle of Lewis. There's almost one of those things where it's like you have people going that Trump is coming here and go, oh God, that's awful. And then they'll say, oh God, that's right. He's, as you know, his mother's from his mother's from near Stornoway. And it's like there is this kind of embarrassment that somebody that is so un-Scottish in the way that he cuts about is actually the most Scottish of American presidents ever. So it's a very conflicting time. This long weekend will be, I think, for an awful lot of Scottish people.
And final question, Clodagh, where do you think this story is going to go? Because it's not going away.
It's not going away. Just as Patty and I were chatting just beforehand, one thing that Trump has always been really fantastic at is controlling the narrative. And he has done that, you know, love him or hate him, he's done it with aplomb for a decade. So, I mean, with all the current kind of storm whirling around him, I would not be in any way ruling him out for the time being. He is a maestro at distraction and deflection and all the rest of it. So I will say he's in it for the time being. There might be a couple of sacrificial offerings along the way in terms of perhaps resignations and that, but I would certainly say he's not going anywhere just yet.
And it's a story we will be keeping a really close eye on here on News Talk Daily. Clodagh and Patty, thank you both so much for joining me on the podcast today. That's it for another week here on News Talk Daily. If you're looking for something to listen to over the weekend, be sure to check out any of the episodes you've missed on the Go Loud Player or wherever you get your podcasts. We've covered moving statues, drones, failed infrastructure plans, and debunked conspiracy theories. We cover all kinds of stories here on News Talk Daily. But until Monday morning, when hopefully Sam Maguire will be in Donegal, that's for a different pod altogether. Have a great weekend.